You're listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. I'm your host, Savannah Wright. When I bring up the artist Björk, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
When I hear the name Björk, the first thing that pops up in my head is her swan dress.
And like it looked like a big dead swan, and like the neck went like around her neck, and then its face like...
Like a real swan?
No, it was a...
So I learned about Björk from an episode of Gilmore Girls where the main characters make a snow woman who looks like her, and then...
The only reason I even know there's a person named Björk is because in Celebrity Jeopardy, Lucy Liu played Björk on SNL.
See, and I know Björk, the Kristen Wiig Björk on SNL, and she knits a sweater for an octopus, and she leaves an extra hole for its hopes and dreams.
So is she famous for being weird, or is she famous for her music?
I think if you listen to Björk, you can pretty easily trace a lot of Radiohead's sonic development, specifically around the time of Kid A and Tom York.
Are you even saying the name right?
I don't know.
The answer to that last question is no. I admit I've made the same mistake for years, but it's Björk, not Björk. Anyway, while there is some truth to each of those impressions, our image of Björk has been distorted by how the media portrayed her early in her career. I know that doesn't sound revelatory. Wow, a celebrity is misunderstood by the media? Tell me more. But what's different about 2020 is that a celebrity can take more control of their image through social media. When Björk was starting her solo career in the early 90s, she didn't have that luxury. So to better understand the real Björk, let's talk about her childhood. Björk was a child prodigy. At the tender age of 3, she was putting on impromptu music performances for her family. And 2 years later, she enrolled in the Icelandic Conservatory of Music. She spent her days growing up flitting between her mother, who lived in a hippie commune, her father, and her grandparents. She became independent and self-sufficient as early as age 5. And she didn't really fit in. She said, "I liked the kids at school, but it was like they didn't really get me. I thought I sort of got them, but I didn't find them very interesting. I was quite an introvert, but a happy introvert. I made up a lot of stories. It was gorgeous, you know, a lot of songs, a lot of walking. I remember walking between school, my granny, my mother's house, my music school, and my father's house, and sort of singing on the way, making up songs." I love that detail, because throughout her career, Björk has mentioned that she gets musical inspiration just from walking around in nature. And that's why a lot of her songs have that 4-4 rhythm. They're composed to the beat of a steady stride. But walking around by yourself doesn't really help your social life. She did have friends, but they were also the odd ones out. As a girl, Björk was teased for her appearance. She said, "I always had this feeling that I had been dropped in from somewhere else. That was how I was treated at school in Iceland, where the kids used to call me China Girl, and everybody thought I was unusual because I was Chinese." To clarify, Björk is a pure Icelander, but she used that estrangement to her advantage. Here's what she said. "It gave me room to do my own thing. In school, I was mostly on my own, playing happily in my private world, making things, composing little songs. If I can get the space I need to do my own thing by being called an alien, an elf, a China girl, or whatever, then that's great." Reflecting on her childhood, you can see the roots of Björk's personality that the media latched onto. The alien, the girl off in her own world, the one raised by hippies, the prodigy. But how did we get from there to the Björk caricature we know today? The more I learned about Björk's history, the more that caricature didn't seem to be tied to Björk herself so much as her nationality. Sure, Björk can be strange and mythical, but that side of her was exaggerated by the mythos of her home country. To oversimplify, she was an alien artist from an alien nation. There's an SNL skit from 2002 that gets at this idea. In this clip, Bjork, played by Winona Ryder, is competing in Celebrity Jeopardy and has just buzzed in.
Bjork!
Sometimes when I am putting oranges in a salad, I think of my thoughts and they make me laugh. No?
Are you Icelandic or retarded?
You get the idea. In his biography of Bjork, music writer Mark Pytlick argues that our image of Bjork was formed by journalists trying and failing to capture her enigmatic personality. He said that over the course of the 90s, they referred to her as Elfin, the Elf Child, herself the Elf, the Elfin Alien, a Pixie, a Deranged Pixie, Pixie Faced, the Icelandic Pixie, Impish, the Icelandic Imp, the Worldly Wise Imp, the Quirky Flighty Icelandic Imp, the Otherworldly Icelandic Diva, Playful Sprite, Media Kook, Extraterrestrial, Bonkers, Bjonkers, Nordic Child Woman, The Girl Who Fell to Earth, Bjork the Dork, Lunar Astronaut, The World's Only Cheerful Techno Surrealist. It goes on and on. Notice how often Iceland is tied to these monikers. Now, this was before Iceland was a huge tourism destination. Outsiders knew little about the country and its residents, so they got their impression from stereotypes. They expected Icelanders to be blonde and blue-eyed, pagan, believers in elves, trolls, and fairies, and heavy drinkers. They expected them to live in igloos and to all be in bands. If you saw the Eurovision Song Contest movie on Netflix, then you've seen all of those tropes in action. Like all stereotypes, these ones have a kernel of truth. But journalists relied on them so heavily that they often failed to see Bjork as her own person. You can hear what I mean in her interview with Johnny Vaughan in 2002.
You know, listening to your music over the years, there's kind of a, I don't know, and I don't mean this, you know, patronising or whatever, that there is a kind of a childlike sort of purity or even beauty to what you do. Is that, do you think you, or is that an Icelandic thing? Is that a sort of purity of where you're from or whatever?
I think it's probably not fair on Iceland to think all the people over there are like me.
Okay.
If you trace this Bjork caricature back in time, you'll find its origin in her media appearances to promote her first album, Debut. At this point in her career, she was still figuring out her identity as an artist, so she did play up her Icelandic punk origin and childlike mannerisms. What they expected, she delivered.
So what do you do on a night out in Iceland? What happens?
You put on your skiing costume, grab 3 bottles of vodka and go downtown. Ooh. The blizzard.
All right.
And get really drunk. I mean, we like to do things properly, you know. Either you don't do them or you do them.
Yeah.
And I can think the manners that people drink here sometimes get a little red wine glass in the middle of the week.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit waste of money, you know. And it's a bit sort of, you're a bit of an alcoholic if you drink every day, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Rather than just drink once a week and then drink sort of 2 bottles of vodka or something, do it properly.
Yeah.
Get it over and done with and get to work Monday morning.
You're a woman after my own heart.
Because she was new to the game, Bjork was open about the details of her life. But as the press became more voracious, she had to draw the line. She had to decide how much of herself she would give away and how much she would keep private. One aspect of her life that she kept intensely private was her son, Sindri. Bjork gave birth to Sindri when she was 19, so he was a child during her early career, and she wanted to protect him from the spotlight. So when the paparazzi started pestering her friends and family, Bjork reached a breaking point. When she arrived in Bangkok for a tour date, this infamous moment happened.
Maybe it was the pressure of the press. Perhaps it was the jet lag. Whatever, it took just one reporter and a simple greeting, "Welcome to Bangkok," for the pop star to lose that Icelandic cool.
Yep, Bjork attacked a reporter. To be fair, she later claimed that the reporter had been harassing her on the phone and trying to talk to her son.
It was like 9 TV channels.
Yeah.
With 4 people in each TV channel, so that makes about 40, 36 to be precise.
Too many, all against
Too
you.
Too many. They're all there, you're not expecting them.
Yeah.
And they ask you all these questions, and you be all polite, and you go, listen, come tomorrow and I'll do a proper interview with them.
Right.
And they won't listen, and they start talking like live on TV. They go, oh, she's too arrogant, she hasn't got any time for us, because she's a pop star from Europe, and all that thing. And I was just polite, and I went like, oh, yeah. And then, guess what they did then?
I don't know, but...
They went and started talking to my son.
Oh, and that's not fair.
And they started, oh, it's really difficult to be son of a pop star, yeah. Isn't it? Ooh.
So you beat
You know,
the
it's a really difficult
it.
Life.
But yeah, not a moment the media would let her live down. That last clip was from a 1996 interview, so a year after she released her second album, Post. That press circuit seemed to mark a turning point in how Bjork dealt with nosy journalists. Yes, she'd play along, but she'd also subtly push back.
I mean, people are always going to misunderstand me. They always are. And I'm quite pleased with it, because they just don't know me. But so I might as well make it into a game, the misunderstanding, and enjoy the misunderstanding, you know?
Flash forward 5 years, Bjork has just released Vespertine. And at this point, she's probably heard every Icelandic joke in the book. Yet she still gets hit with one in every interview. But instead of getting exasperated, she has fun with it. She turns the tables. Here's a clip from her interview with German late night host Harald Schmidt.
For example, younger people who don't drive cars, or how do they travel in Iceland?
Oh, young people, they drive cars. What? They have jeeps. It's the most common vehicle there is.
Yes?
Jeeps with four-wheel drive.
Ah, you need it in Iceland?
Yeah, it's the biggest hobby. We don't have so much things like golf,
yes,
and squash and stamp collecting.
You're lucky people. Yeah. You're
and
lucky people.
Butterfly collecting.
Yes, so you're lucky. You're lucky. Yeah.
Yeah, people go on the weekends and they drive into the unknown.
Yeah.
And they go over glaciers and they might fall into cracks.
Yes.
And die. And then they many together and then one jeep has to... People in the one jeep have to rescue the other people in the other jeep. And then they come back and they have very good stories to tell.
Bjork plays into their expectations to show that a ridiculous question deserves a ridiculous answer. She did the same thing in that 2002 interview with Johnny Vaughan.
You said that Icelandic humour is better than British. What sums up Icelandic humour, and have you got an Icelandic joke for us?
Hvað brúnt að svífur í loftinu?
I don't know. Hvað brúnt að svífur í loftinu?
Fjárstýr kjötbóla.
Which means...
I won't tell you.
And in a 2004 interview with Jonathan Ross.
You are from Iceland originally.
Yep.
You are Icelandic.
Yep.
I always get a little bit confused.
Yep.
Is that where the Eskimos live in Iceland?
No.
You're sure?
Yeah, I'm very sure.
Okay.
I've been asked and done some research and double-checked many times.
But you know what's odd is I was under the impression, and obviously incorrectly, that just about all people from Iceland looked kind of like Annika Rice, kind of like blonde and blue eyes and...
They sort of do, actually. I'm the odd one out.
You're the Eskimo.
Yes.
And it's not like she's exacting revenge. She's very good-natured in these exchanges, despite the interviewer purposefully misunderstanding her or trying to pigeonhole her. It's like she has accepted her role as an icon, even if that icon doesn't represent her true self.
I think there's a choice. There was definitely a choice in my life around 96, if I wanted to be a full-time celebrity or if I wanted to make music.
Right, I remember.
And I moved to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
To make music. But I don't think being a celebrity is bad. I think it's a full-time job. And it invades your soul. And it's sort of a bit like being Mother Teresa. Because you sacrifice your personal life for the public.
Yeah.
And it's something that's very needed by the public. Otherwise it wouldn't exist. And I think it's as important as being a doctor or a... or a taxi driver, or it's a very important role in society. But I've got offered it, and I decided to rather stay a musician.
Björk's values are clear. It has, and always will be, about the music for her. So forget what you've heard. If you want to understand Björk the person, you have to spend time with her music. Now, when I started writing this podcast, I thought my goal was to bring Björk's music down to earth. I fell into that same trap, maybe created by the press as well, that Björk's music isn't for everyone, that it's the music of intellectuals. But after learning and listening more, I've come to see Björk's music for what it really is. Pop music. Okay, I know what some of you are thinking. Pop music? I know pop music, and Björk is not that. Björk's music doesn't fit the bubblegum pop sound of the late 90s and early 2000s, when she was releasing some of her greatest work. She uses a wider variety of instruments and fairly unconventional vocal techniques, but she keeps the pop structure so that we can get our bearings and enjoy the ride. So to say I'm bringing Björk's music down to earth supposes that it's some intellectual body of work that needs to be explained. No, Björk's music is an often misunderstood collection of art pop that needs to be appreciated. We just need to spend a little more time with it to get used to her style. But in time, you'll find that her music is meant for a general audience. Björk's discography has the full range of emotions and sounds so that it can appeal to anyone, just as she intended.
I'm a pop musician, and I make music for everyone, not for VIP or educated people or something like that. So I want to make that, it has to be pop music, you know, that everybody can relate to. And so it's a challenge. It's an experiment, and I've got a clue will work or not, but you have to try.
Like Björk, I don't have a clue if this podcast will work or not. I don't know if I'll be able to get you to put aside your misconceptions so you can understand and enjoy her work. But I have to try. You've been listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. Björk Unraveled is produced independently by me, Savannah Wright. In the next episode, we'll dive into the genre-bending instrumentation of debut and post to see how Björk writes songs that are so original yet so catchy. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and submit a review on whatever podcast app you're using. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Björk Unraveled. You'll find a new episode in your feeds every other Thursday. Thanks for listening.